Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for software engineering leaders. I'm your host, Aaron Syme. Today, I'm bringing back a past guest to talk about something incredibly important to leaders of all kinds, learning. How do you learn about a new topic? How do you share that knowledge with your team? How do you make the time for it? And how do you know when you've learned enough about a topic and it's time to dive in and tackle the hard work of implementing it? Allison McMillan is a fractional VP of engineering and a team coach and facilitator. This conversation definitely inspired me to be more thoughtful about how I'm learning about new concepts and keeping my skills fresh so I can be a better leader. I'm sure her insights will do the same for you. So let's get to my conversation with Allison. Allison McMillan is a fractional VP of engineering and leadership consultant with over 25 years of design and facilitation experience for gatherings, covering everything from meetings and strategy planning sessions to offsites and conferences. She's previously held leadership roles at QuotaPath, Dev, and GitHub. Allison has worn many hats in multiple industries as a community builder, managing director, and software engineer. Allison started a podcast about being a parent in tech, parent-driven development, and is an internationally recognized keynote speaker. She's very involved in the Ruby community as a current board member and the former president of Ruby Central. And she's been a past guest here on the Scaling Tech podcast. You can learn more about her at AllisonMcMillan.com. Welcome back to the Scaling Tech podcast, Allison.
Thank you. It's so nice to be back.
Oh, it's so great to have you back here as well. So today we're going to be discussing how curious leaders can unlock learning for themselves and their teams. But I wanted to start with the question, what distinguishes someone as a curious leader to you? And why is that so important to their leadership abilities?
Yeah, it's a great question to start off with. For me, and this is both for myself and actually anyone that I hire, when people say like, what are the key things that you hire for? Somebody that has a growth mindset. I think especially in engineering and software development and tech in general, there are a few things that are happening. First, tools are changing all the time, right? You constantly have to keep up. You have to know what's happening in the industry. And you have to know how to best utilize yourself and your time and your abilities and your team's time and abilities. So there's just a lot to keep up with all the time. As an engineering leader, we are constantly put in new challenges, in new situations, in new like, hey, is it possible to do this? And the answer is always like, I'm sure it is. Let me see and figure out what that actually looks like, right? Because everything is possible. The question is, how is it possible? What does it look like? What does it cost, right? Those sorts of aspects. But what it means is that you always have to be curious. And sometimes I'll say this last bit about being a curious leader. Sometimes you have to figure out if the question that you're being asked is actually the right question. And in terms of like leading with curiosity, there's also a piece sometimes of, okay, I'm being asked to do this thing. Why, right? Like, what's the reasoning behind it? Especially in leadership, it's coming from the CEO. It's coming from maybe somebody technical, maybe somebody non-technical, right? What is the thing that we're trying to accomplish? What's the question that we're trying to answer, which is sometimes the thing that you're being asked and sometimes not the thing that you're being asked.
Yeah, those are all great points. And one that particularly jumped out at me just because it's top of mind for me is you talked about looking for curiosity and a growth mindset when you're interviewing people as well. And I'm in the process of interviewing for a new management position in our company, and so this is very top of mind for me. So if you're interviewing me and you're watching this, ask me questions, right? I always leave a spot, even in short time windows for an interview, where I say, questions do you have for me? either about my company or what we just described in this role. And too often people say, oh, I don't really have any questions. I think you explained it well. I'd like to think I'm explaining it that well, but probably not. There's got to be something that you can ask, right? Show that curiosity, right? Because I think that is so important in leadership. Particularly when I'm looking at someone in a management role, that's really important to me, seeing that. And the other thing that you said that made me think of, how do you notice like a growth mindset in those sorts of situations when you're considering someone for a management role is, I forget exactly how you phrase it, but basically saying, I don't know how exactly this can be done yet, but we can figure it out, right? That attitude, that sort of can-do attitude, that growth mindset, I love that too, because I think a curious leader, maybe part of being a curious leader is also being a humble leader in the sense that you recognize when you know something and when you don't know something, but always having that, it's part confidence, but also just part curiosity of saying, yeah, well, we can figure it out. Let me get back to you on that.
Yeah. I think also sometimes I know this happens with me and a lot of engineering leaders that I know. Sometimes we lead with the blocker questions, right? Sort of the like, oh, you said this idea and here are immediately the 10 things that come to mind that like feel worrisome, concerning, not doable, blah, blah, blah. And so sometimes what I'll say there is something like, okay, here are some questions that I have about this, or here are some things that I'm concerned about, but this is my gut, like this is my initial opinion, or like I have seen this before, this was my past experience, let me confirm it, let me check it, let me ask a few people, do a little bit of digging, etc., so that it doesn't come off as like stop energy or blocking, right? Or like, oh, this person thinks that my idea is a bad idea. Maybe you do think it's a bad idea, but like maybe, like industry changes so quickly. So like maybe it was a bad idea 4 years ago when I last encountered it, but maybe now there are tools, safeguards, checks, new languages, like new things that make it a less bad idea.
Exactly. Less bad idea. Exactly. No, it's great. I mean, I like that. That phrase stop energy that you used is a good one for that. That resonates with me because I think you want leaders to be, the extremes maybe are to the stop energy on the one end, the person who always leads with a negative around any idea or concept presented to them, whether that's by management or by a customer or by their team, whatever the case may be, leading with that negative energy is no good. That can really kill creativity and psychological safety in the organization, right? But then maybe the other extreme, because there are bad ideas out there, and sometimes those of us in senior management are responsible for those bad ideas, and we need to be told that, right? So the other extreme is that improv style of yes and, right? Yeah. Which I like a lot about that, and I think there's a lot to be learned from improv in like management and consulting. And so it's something I hear people reference regularly. But Sometimes you shouldn't actually build on the idea too. So like, just always being a yes person is not the right response either. There's somewhere in the middle, right?
Yeah. Sometimes there's like, like a toxic positivity or an optimism. Right. But then if you like are always optimistic, but then you come back and it ends up being way different, right? Then that diminishes the level of trust. And it's like, okay, can I trust this person's opinion when they're always like, yeah, that sounds doable, or, should be no problem. And then they're always coming back with the same, like, actually, I did some more research. And so, there is like, there's stop energy. And on the other side, there's always being super optimistic. And there's this nice middle ground, which is, a little bit of the phrasing and the approaches that we learn as we get more senior in leadership, right? How do I phrase this thing in my brain? How do I like create some space between my brain and my mouth so that what I'm thinking in my brain, the phrases that come out are a little bit more measured or a little bit more like, okay, here are my thoughts and here are the next steps that I'm going to take.
Well, you're teaching, we're only a few minutes in here, Allison. You're already teaching me a few great phrases because I don't think I've heard toxic positivity before, but maybe that's just because no one's ever accused me of being toxically positive, but hopefully not quite to the stop energy side either. But before we dive into this more, I want to get a little update because we did have you as a guest on the Scaling Tech podcast about a year ago. We spoke in that conversation about team offsites and engineering team health, and definitely recommend to our listeners go back and check that episode out. It was a really great conversation. But tell us a little bit of what have you been working on since we spoke last year?
It's a great question. I have been super lucky. I've had an incredible year with a whole variety of experiences, which is sort of how I like it, a balancing of the different services that I offer. So, you know, I offer fractional VP of engineering leadership or CTO, fractional CTO. I offer one-on-one advising and mentoring. And then I offer meeting design support and facilitation. And again, like you said in my bio, right, that's everything from we have this meeting that needs to be revitalized to like, we need to do a, you know, strategic planning session to what is our company prioritizing and why, to, you know, engineering team offsite or company offsite, et cetera. So I have had the opportunity to really do a variety of all of those things. I've had a bunch of amazing clients, a few sort of longer term fractional ones. And then I've had the chance to facilitate just a ton of offsites and gatherings, again, from whole companies to engineering teams to nonprofits and government, and really helping them like prioritize and plan and get individuals working better together. So it's been a great year. I've been super, super fortunate and lucky, but it's really worked with a lot of amazing people over the last year.
That's fantastic. That does sound like quite a year for sure. Congratulations on that. So let's start to move towards a topic for today about, you know, learning for the curious leader and their team. And so let's start, you know, first kind of individually, what's your favorite way to learn as a leader?
My favorite way to learn as a leader is to like dig in and start doing things again, right? It's that growth mindset of like, okay, how do I figure out how to learn this thing? I think these days it's a mix of using AI to ask some of the questions that I want to or need to ask. I also have I've done a bit of sort of network mapping so that I know, again, I've been fortunate not just in the last year, but throughout my career to work with really awesome people who are incredibly smart, much smarter than I am, and doing awesome things. And so when a question comes up, that's also sometimes, especially if it's something that I'm way less familiar about, that I feel like is much further outside of my like wheelhouse or comprehension, I will sit down and think, who do I know who knows a lot about this topic, who I might be able to grab 15 or 30 minutes on their calendar just to ask for some questions, some pointers, right? How can I do enough research beforehand to know sort of what to ask and then chat with someone to get enough of a primer to see if I'm moving in the right direction and then be able to move further in that direction. One thing that I'll add that I do like to add, because I learned this when I had kids, was that for birthing individuals in particular, actually your brain can change through that process. And so one of the things that I always like to mention when we talk about learning is that how you learned previously might not be how you learn today. I had this after my first, I had this sort of, I want to say like 2-3 month freak out, because what I had done to learn in the past, which was like diving in, reading, reading a lot, et cetera, was not working for me. And I had this moment where I was like, oh my God, can I just not learn new things? Like, is my learning over and done? And I sought out actually like a handful of other moms in particular. And they were like, no, like sometimes your brain just like totally reorganizes itself. And so what has worked for you in the past? So this is like a little known fact that I always, as a woman in tech with kids, I always like to sort of pop into, you know, any time that I'm talking about learning, because it's important for women to know, and it's important for managers to know, right? When folks are coming back from maternity leave, like it could be that methods that worked in the past are not what work, and it might take that person a couple of weeks, a month or two, to like figure out what their new learning style is. So yeah, so that's generally my approach. I mean, I think for me also with kids, like everything has to fit within work hours. So, you know, it's great when people are like, oh, and then I like do some open source, or I'll like do a toy project over the weekend. Like those things aren't options for me. And so really figuring out how to like maximize my time. And again, that's why it's like time box research. Who can I talk to? What AI tools or other tools are sort of at my disposal? Focused additional research.
Oh, that's great. And I think we're going to dive into several of those in more details. But those are great things to mention there for sure. One you mentioned, you know, as a parent, and I can certainly resonate with this too, of not having the time on weekends as much to do a side project, to experiment with things. My kids are now both in university, so I'm starting to realize that I, you know, how much time I didn't have in the past that I do now and have the opportunity to fill it with a little bit. So, that creates some opportunities, some time boxes for learning that I didn't have previously either. But I think, you know, regardless of the stage of life that we're at, it's always hard to make time for these things. So, you know, how do it, especially for, you know, like you're running your own business, I'm running a business, you know, how do you make the time for learning? You know, it's not a billable hour. So sometimes it's hard to fit in.
I mean, I would push back a little bit about if it isn't a billable hour, right? If I am more capable to accomplish the work by, you know, spending some time learning, right? Like that is an aspect of, you know, I'm not going to walk into every situation and know everything. Now, I've been doing this for long enough and at enough companies that there are a bunch of things that used to be sort of heavy research projects that now it's a little bit like, okay, this is a relatively common problem. I just have to figure out what flavor of this problem and what flavor of, you know, solution sort of works for this company, which is still learning, but tends to be more of like, I guess, like sociological. It's a little bit more like people learning as opposed to like, okay, subjects, you know, subject matter expertise learning. But I think you just have to make the time for it. And I think part of making the time for it is I'm like pretty ruthless about my schedules and about the tools that I use to like keep myself organized. There are a lot of them, and sometimes I walk people through my system and they're like, wow, that's like a lot, you know. And I'm like, yeah, but this is how my life goes, right? Like this is the way that I can manage all the different things that I'm doing and involved in. And then again, I think it's about knowing for every situation, how much do you need to know, what that level looks like, getting better and better at identifying rabbit holes, right? And also getting better at clarifying what the assumptions are. So with the person who's asking the question, if I know I'm about to dive into something, it's like, okay, I am making these three assumptions. Are those correct assumptions, right? And spending maybe a couple of minutes thinking, okay, if there's this big bucket of things that I need to learn, right, or this big subject, what are the constraints, parameters, boundaries, assumptions that I can put on this question that half my learning time, that quarter my learning time, right? What is exactly the thing that I'm trying to learn, and how do I learn that thing to the level and amount that I have to learn that thing to do my job and to fit the needs of my clients effectively?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I appreciate the pushback on learning should be billable time, because it's a healthy reminder. I think for me personally, I guess as a leader, one of the things that I've learned is incredibly important for me to have the space to learn is proper delegation and creating that margin. I often think, and may have mentioned it on the podcast before as well, one of the more impactful quotes I heard from a speaker at a conference one time, and unfortunately I don't remember who it was or even the full context of it, but what they talked about almost as like a sidebar was the importance of having margin in their lives. And having margin in, I think they mentioned, you know, work, health, and personal life, that you have to, you can't overbook yourself, which it spoke to me because I tend to overbook myself.
I'm still working on that one.
I am as well, for sure. But if you don't leave that margin, right, then you don't have time to deal with crises when they come up, because obviously we don't plan for those. And you don't have time for learning and personal growth, right? And so I think something I've learned and have gotten a little bit better at least is through better delegation, creating margin for myself to do some learning and kind of, I'll give one example of something I did in that. If I've had my company for about 15 years now, and it's probably been 12 years since I pushed code to GitHub that a client should use, right? And at this point, none of our clients would want me to write code for them. We have people much smarter than me for that. But nonetheless, sometimes, you know, I kind of, my business and leadership side, I start, you know, starting to feel a little too far from it. And so created a little bit of space in my schedule the last few months to do a little side project myself in Rails. I hadn't written anything using Rails in a long time. And it was partly just to refresh my skills a little bit as a coder, but also it was a good excuse for me to experiment with how could I use ChatGPT as a coding assistant, because obviously everybody's talking about that. People do it all the time. And there's a lot of, you know, benefits that we're seeing from that, but I hadn't personally experienced it and kind of wanted to get a little bit more of a sense for that. So I managed to create, I guess what you could call billable time, you know, time within my 9 to 5, so to speak, to work on this for a few weeks. And it was a really healthy exercise for me personally. Came away from it pretty impressed, by the way, but also I think a tempered enthusiasm for, you know, how much we can use AI to improve our work as developers. And for that situation in particular, where, you know, I'm just like, I know there's a way to do this, but I don't remember the syntax of Rails create or whatever, like, you know, it just walked me through that. It made me so much more efficient in relearning something that I used to know better.
Yeah. One of my favorite ways to use AI is when I am thinking about a concept or I'm trying to sort of brush up on something. I will ask it to explain something to me like I'm 5, and then to explain it to me like I'm 10. And then to explain it to me like I'm 20, and then to explain it to me like I'm a seasoned, experienced professional. And honestly, like, that is the fastest way that I even just get sort of that initial primer, because it's interesting to see those sort of developmental, like, okay, what's the simplest explanation? And then how does it get built on and built on and built on? And it's like a really, really fast, easy way just to be like, okay, what are the core things that it also helps with terms or jargon that I should then be, you know, sort of researching or asking about afterwards. You know, I can ask then sort of like, oh, are there different interpretations around this point? What are the, like, you know, what are the different things to look into? But yeah, 5, 10, 20, seasoned professional. It's one of my favorite uses of AI.
That's a great tip there, for sure. I like that a lot. I've heard before, I've kind of, you know, you should give a little more context or sort of almost like a persona of how the LLM should explain something to you, but doing it in steps like that, I'm gonna use that myself for sure. I love that. That's great advice, Allison. Thank you. I want to take a moment to tell you about our sponsor, WebRTC Ventures. At WebRTC Ventures, our teams are experts in building live video into your web or mobile applications. We've literally built hundreds of them. We have over a decade of experience using both open source and commercial media servers in a wide range of industries, including telehealth, edtech, broadcasting, and more. We also publish a lot of helpful tips and industry interviews.
on our website and our YouTube channel. So be sure to check out webrtc.ventures and we can help you build, scale, and deploy your video solution.
So let's talk a little bit more about AI. What else do you see as kind of the impact of AI on learning for leaders?
Like I said, it's a really good way to sort of get a primer of a new thing that you have to dig into or understand. It's really great for when you're trying to decipher jargon or acronyms. It's really fantastic for that. I trust it less with sort of like code related things. Like there's, we're like working on my own website, sometimes I'll ask for like, can you put this into a flexible column, responsive column layout or whatever? And then I'll read through the code and I'll be like, I don't think that's quite right. Can you try again? I don't trust it as much with code, but it is really good for like, I'm trying to figure out what this function does or with this, why people choose whatever language. And so it is really good for, as engineers, we get really good at Googling things. And AI is like a better Google, right? Because you have to figure out the right thing to ask for, but then once you ask for that thing, you can ask follow-up questions, right? I don't quite understand that. Can you explain what's happening, what's going on there? It's like being able to talk to a really experienced engineer and just sort of ask them questions. Sometimes there's like some verification, right? AI also makes things up sometimes. You might also still want to have that conversation with that senior staff or principal level engineer that's like, hey, this is my understanding. Like, full disclosure, got it from AI. Like, does this sound right? But again, at the level that I'm usually sort of asking questions or trying to dig in, it's good enough for a lot of that initial stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it makes me think about an old friend I had who, gosh, maybe over 20 years ago for sure, wrote a really thick book on Java. And even 10 or 15 years ago, he would joke that he wrote, that he spent years writing the best doorstop. Because at that point, even well before LLMs, that was all it was kind of good for. But early in my career, that's how we would learn, right? You'd buy the best textbook you could, you'd flip through it, you'd look for the examples, try and adapt them to yours. Then we got to Google. That was a better form of doing the same thing. And in a way, working with an LLM now, you're still doing the same thing. It's just so much more conversational and, definitely Gen AI is more than just a search engine, but that's where I really, that analogy makes a lot of sense to me. It's just this being this incredibly helpful and conversational search engine for us. But just like you wouldn't cut and paste one of those examples, even from that Java book, 30 years ago, and then just call that your production application, you've still got to adapt it to what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, this has less to do with learning, but it also, it also speeds things up. Like, here's the information. Can you summarize this into, three key bullet points? Or, I am looking for a Notion template that does X, Y, and Z. Like, tell me how to set up that template and like the exact things to click and use and, blah, blah, blah. We'll also sometimes use it to like dig into some more complex billing, right? Like, hey, can you walk me through some companies that have, where their billing is a little bit more complex and you're trying to really pick things apart and figure out what's going on? Using AI to really say like, okay, explain, after reading the company's docs, et cetera, like, okay, explain to me like what this is, what it's used for. Again, that's sort of a leadership level when you're trying to figure out budget stuff, et cetera, really good for that as well.
And although hopefully most of our listeners are already familiar with this, we should certainly give the disclaimer too that if you're using an AI assistant of any kind for coding, you shouldn't be cutting and pasting proprietary client code or confidential information into it, that the better way to do it generally speaking, is to ask it help you work through a concept or an algorithm and then adapt that into your code rather than pushing confidential things out to something that might get reused publicly.
Yeah, that's I was actually, as I said that, I was thinking, I was like, oh, and all of those sorts of use cases are things that have nothing to do with like one company or anything that's proprietary. You know, it's just sort of like digging into a concept or a what is this thing or whatever that is really more universal knowledge that, you know, is applicable for most companies and not just, you know, yeah, again, that proprietary. So being careful there.
Yeah, but definitely a very efficient way to help, you know, remember some syntax. And I liked too, when I was using it kind of as a coding assistant, how it does have some, you know, it's maintaining some state of what you asked previously. And so it was able to say, oh, you want to create, you know, a model that looks like this. Well, given the context of the example you gave me before, you know, here's like the columns you probably want to put in it and stuff like that. And even making some suggestions like that, that at times was off base, but it was still kind of helpful. And I thought was kind of a cool feature. You know, that trying to digest 50 Stack Overflow posts is not going to give you, right?
Yeah. And like any tool, right? The more that you use it, the more that you figure out, you know, okay, what does the prompt have to be? How do I adjust this question? How do I dig into this answer more effectively? You know, like any tool, the more that you use it, the more that you figure out how it works and the right things to ask, just like getting really good at Google.
Right. Exactly. So you've made a comment a couple times. I want to dive into a little bit deeper about knowing how much to learn about something. And I think that's really important. I think of that too. And like with all the work that you do around as a facilitator and, you know, facilitating offsites, and that's a situation where I would think you really have to learn, you know, like just enough, right? Because you may be diving into a company maybe you haven't worked with before, a situation you don't know the details of, but you need to learn just enough about that in order to help them, you know, facilitate a helpful outcome. So how do you approach learning for like a time-constrained situation like facilitation?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great question. And as a facilitator, one of the things that I always say is my goal is not to be a subject matter expert. Right? Like those are the people that I am facilitating the group. They are the subject matter experts. My expertise is in process expertise, right? It's in knowing what questions need to be asked, what the modality or sort of exercise that needs to be used, and what connection of like, okay, we're going to do these groupings of exercises, and this is because it flows in a certain way and it gets to these, you know, specific outcomes. So for me, in those scenarios, it's really getting sort of high level overview, right? What are the, sometimes I'll ask a team, like, give me the top 10 bullet points, one sentence bullet points of your goals for the next half or of your strategic plan, or because I don't need the like 30 page strategic plan and I don't need sort of like all the goals with all of the context, et cetera. But what I do need is how many goals are there? How complex or how many sort of dimensions is the strategic plan? Because all of that fits into when I'm facilitating and when I'm putting together a design, what that design needs to look like and what the exercise or modality needs to look like to be able to get to the desired outcomes. And so it is sort of like, okay, how much of this organization or background or et cetera do I need to know in order to lead the group and really design the day or half day or days effectively? But also like, I should not be able to sort of give you a summary of, you know, these are your goals for the half and this is how you're going to accomplish them and this is why you want to accomplish them and this is the historical context around them. And I probably will know that by the end of the day, right? Because I design in a way that sort of brings a lot of that to the surface and questions it and validates it and, you know, based on what the outcome and the goals of the facilitation are. But process expert, not subject matter expert.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I'm not the expert level facilitator you are, but when I've been in that sort of situation, it's I always felt like I need to know enough about the process mainly, but just enough to have enough confidence to kind of think on my feet. And I think, you know, in general, if you have that skill of being a curious learner or a growth mindset, that's what gave, you know, me the confidence in those sorts of situations that I could adapt to it, to kind of, you know, the flow of the conversation, or maybe as an outsider see a little bit of, you know, when things are going in a good direction or not. But probably most importantly, always having that confidence of saying, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, well, you're asking me to be the subject matter expert now, and I'm not, right?
Yeah. And some of the training that I've gotten has been around how to bring that back to the group, right? So how to effectively, when a question is directed to me, how to effectively say, like, that's a really interesting question. Who feels like we need to dive into the context in order to be able to move forward? Or like, who can talk to that? And there are a few different sort of like design ways that on my feed, I can sort of be like, you know, okay, we're going to take 5 minutes and put a post-it board up, or, you know, or we're going to take 5 minutes and these three people are going to sort of like think about, okay, what's the most important information to mention to the rest of the room? You know, so some of it is like when I get that question, being able to effectively and in a way that doesn't feel like putting someone on the spot or like, you know, sort of put that back to the group and ask like, is that, and to have enough information to know when a question like that goes into the parking lot, right? So goes into the like, this is a great question and we're going to write it down so that it can be talked about later, versus like, this is a great question and it's 100% necessary for us to understand this, for the group to understand this in order to achieve the outcomes that we're hoping for at the end of this session.
That makes sense. Now, what about when, you know, when you're wearing your VP of engineering hat and, you know, you do have more responsibility to be the subject matter expert or to find the solution? How in that sort of situation, when you've got a difficult problem or, you know, new concept that you're exploring, things like that, how do you know when to stop, you know, researching and start applying what you've learned so far?
Yeah. I think that applying quickly is super, super important, in the role. Now you don't want to just sort of like blindly start applying, but I'm always, it's not that dissimilar to like, what is the smallest thing that we can ship that would have an impact for a client, and how quickly can we ship, right? Like, how quickly can we ship that MVP? It's not that dissimilar for learning, right? What is the question being asked, and how quickly can I get to an answer that at least gets us a step forward in the process, a step forward towards, you know, the goal or the reason why the question is being answered. And how can I very quickly recognize how much time I will need in order to be able to fully answer the question, right? Sometimes the knowledge is on the team. It's just not in my brain, right? So in that case, it's, you know, recognizing, and I'm not shy about going to an engineer, you know, and being like, hey, this question was asked of me. I don't have a lot of context here. You have a lot of knowledge here. Can we grab 15 minutes? You can sort of give me a rundown so I can have a sense of what I, you know, what I need to know to communicate up, around, et cetera, effectively. And if not, it's knowing like, okay, I know 20 people that have this knowledge and I can probably get on someone's calendar in the next 24 hours versus like, I know one person with this knowledge and like, it might take, you know, a week to get a more full answer in a way that I'm really comfortable with, sort of thing. But I think that it's always important to think about what is a slice or a piece of the answer that I can get that moves us. Again, it's like shipping an MVP or like getting a different error message, right? Like, what is the thing that you can do to move the step forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've always thought with engineers in particular, you know, not only do we want to solve a problem, you know, in its entirety, but we want to come up with, the best, most perfect solution to it many times. And that hinders us, right? You know, that sends us down the rabbit hole that you mentioned earlier. And so I've always thought in, like an agile team, sometimes we talk about, putting in like a technical spike to explore something as part of a sprint, and just time boxing that, since you don't know, you don't know how to estimate it necessarily because you don't know what you're going to learn. You don't know how you're going to apply that yet, but you know that you probably shouldn't do too much. You shouldn't spend the whole sprint working on that research question, for example.
And sometimes it's aligning, like you mentioned, priorities before, right? And in terms of like making time for learning, it's also like, what am I not going to prioritize? What is going to fall on the floor or happen next week or next month so that I have time for learning? Sometimes with these questions, it's also making sure that I'm aligned with when there will be an answer. Like, is this a this day problem, a this week problem, a this month problem, this year problem, right? Because I can keep things on my list, but I know actually I have 2 or 3 months to like dig into this and look into this, and I want to make progress on it, but it doesn't need to be super quick, immediate turnaround time versus like, no, we have to figure this out like literally within the next 4 business days to, be able to provide an answer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and sometimes our role as a leader is not to be the person necessarily to find the solution, but to be the, the servant leader to the team and help them with what they need in order to do it. So things like, you mentioned network mapping and sort of looking at, who do I know that might be able to help with this issue, who has more expertise in this area, and making those connections for yourself and for the team. And then I think that last one you just mentioned about helping understand the priority of this is incredibly important, because I'm as guilty as anybody of this when, when a crisis happens or something unexpected happens, I want to make it go away right away. But, that doesn't mean the check engine light on my car has to be dealt with today, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think also, for requests from CEO or from, like whoever, like, There are some people where they, when they ask you a question, it carries weight, but actually like they want to know sort of what's on your plate, and they want to know, I've heard from a lot of CEOs, CTOs, right, folks, and that they're like, oh, every time I ask a question, everybody treats it like an emergency. You don't necessarily need it treated like an emergency. And some people will be like, this is not an emergency, but this is something that I'm curious about. And still people will sort of treat it like an emergency. And so it's really, at multiple levels, sort of understanding like, okay, just because a question comes from this person or this person with this title, I'll give an example. One of the ways that I used to learn to stay sort of closer to the tech was by pairing. And as I just sort of fly on the wall pairing, sort of like, okay, I want to learn about this part of the code base. As my title changed, it got more and more difficult to pair because it was like, okay, I can't just ping a software engineer and say like, hey, can I like jump onto a Zoom with you while you're like working on this ticket? I'm just interested in watching. And right, like there's some scariness there about how right. They're like supposed to perform with me, And so, I always now, I still pair, but it's usually much later or with sort of more, principal staff level engineers, right, at a different level, because there needs to be that level of like comfortability and trust that it's like, I just want to learn, like, I'm not in the code base, 95% of the time. Maybe I do a loop through of pull requests here and there just to sort of keep up on what's happening, et cetera. But I want to learn about this part of the code base, or I have some time this week and I want to get a little bit closer to the tech, but I have to be really careful now with how I do that so that it's not, so also so that somebody doesn't like prepare for multiple hours for me to, I've had that in the past before too, where like by the time we jump onto pair, like it's obvious that they spent like a lot of time preparing and like mentally walking through exactly what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. So it feels a little bit more of like a code presentation than right. I'm just trying to like figure out how to solve this bug or like, figure out how to do this next thing on this feature. So, also just helping to, with that alignment, helping to understand, like you can ask that question. You can ask that question of like, how important is the answer to this question to you and how robust or full and how I'll add another dimension, how confident do you need this answer to be? Because sometimes if they're like, I just want like a broad strokes idea, right? I can give that faster and I can be like, I am 60% confident in this, or, you know, versus like, I've spent time, I've dug in, I'm 90% confident in this answer and in this answer being a complete answer to the question that you're asking. And sometimes people just want like a 30% confidence, back of napkin, broad idea of X.
Yeah, so knowing what are we going to do with this learning? What's the outcome that we expect from it? So as we wrap up here, I think, you know, my last question for you is kind of just building on that a little bit. What else can we do as leaders to help our team learn and to help share our curiosity with them, but more importantly, help them to be curious? So it's not just, you know, us like teaching or instructing the team on something, but the team builds a communal sense of curiosity amongst themselves.
I mean, I think the first two things are making it okay, right? Really explicitly like saying, I am learning this thing, or this is how I learn, or this is how I, you know, or even explicitly saying like, I am asking you this question. Let me know what time you need or what resources you need to dig into it to find out the answer, right? So I think the first thing is just being really explicit and making them know that it's okay, and role modeling what it looks like. I think beyond that, I've been doing some interesting things recently. Some people, I always check like, is this something that you think you'll like love or hate? Because I feel like people either love or hate it. But I've been using Loom more often for informational updates that I do, for, you know, when I'm doing something that's part of my workflow, when I, you know, I'm just sort of like, okay, here's a spreadsheet or here's a group of slides. Let me just recently did this for an offsite. Like, you know, I didn't really want to set a synchronous meeting, but I just sort of wanted to walk them through like what the plan was. And so I just put together a real quick Loom to give a sense of that. And voice notes. I feel like voice notes is sort of a little bit of like a generational thing. Like some people love voice notes and some people hate voice notes. But what I've realized is like, there are times when I go to start typing something and I'm like, okay, I could type this and then refine it and then make sure it's clear and then format it and then whatever. Or actually, I think that what I'm asking will come across more effectively in a voice note, or the question that I'm trying to answer or whatnot. So, you know, we have these new tools. We have AI, we have Looms, we have voice notes, right? And knowing who loves and hates those, but also like sort of utilizing those more. The last thing that I will do, and this is less about like encouraging curiosity and more about when somebody's trying to learn something that is in my wheelhouse or is in my brain that I'm delegating or that I'm handing over. That's also actually where Looms are really good. If it's something that I'm delegating, I will just record like, this is what it looks like for me. This is what I do. Change it up however you'd like, but at least now you have sort of a baseline of what it looks like. Sort of like a see one, pair one, do one. I do this a lot when I'm onboarding new managers, where they will sort of like shadow me in a meeting or how I lead a meeting or how I do a thing. And then we'll work collaboratively on it the next time so that we're really sort of like doing it, you know, sort of synchronously together. And then the next time, like they do it and either, you know, I'm in the meeting and can give them like feedback afterwards, or like they do it. And if it's a document, you know, I sort of like, I read it over and I give it a check. So I'm still there to support and to refine. But they are, you know, taking the, like, they're taking it on, they're taking the leadership, they're taking the ownership. And I do this whenever I onboard an engineering manager. I always ask them like, what's your stat? Do you just want to take everything and like ask me questions as you go through. Do you want to do this sort of like see one, pair one, do one? Do you want to like, do you want to shadow me for a while, right? What works for you? What sort of support do you feel like you need to feel confident as quickly as possible, like taking this task, doing these things?
I love it. Yeah, that's great. See one, pair one, do one. Good, easy to remember, and but also tuning it to what, you know, each individual's learning style is. So, maybe doing a combination of those when you're communicating across a team then. But yeah, lots of great tidbits in there. Thank you so much, Allison. Sadly, we're at the end of our time here, but we could keep, and I'm curious to keep talking with you more about this, but we have to time box it. But it's been a fantastic conversation, Allison. Really appreciate all the insights you've shared with us again. Thank you for coming back to the Scaling Tech Podcast. Appreciate it. How can our listeners get in touch with you for more information to learn more about your work?
Yeah, the best places are LinkedIn, I feel like, is my main social media at the moment. You could just search Allison McMillan on LinkedIn. So that's a good place. And then AllisonMcMillan.com is my website, which also links to everywhere else that I live on the internet. So that's also a good central spot to check out.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Allison, for joining me today on the Scaling Tech Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
On behalf of the thousands of developers we've placed with our clients, I want to briefly tell you about our sponsor, Agility Feed. Agility Feed has been building nearshore agile teams for U.S. companies since 2010. We were an early pioneer in doing this sort of developer staffing. Our team can help you recruit talented software engineers and technical teams in Latin America. We'll handle all aspects of recruiting, contracting, and payments for you so you can focus on delivering great software. To learn more, check us out at agilityfeet.com. That's agilityfeat.com.